This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. This Friday marks 10 years since 18-year-old Michael Brown Jr. was shot and killed by a white police officer in Ferguson, Missouri. His death marked a global movement calling for police accountability and an end to racial injustice. And while the circumstances surrounding August 9, 2014 are etched into collective memory, for Brown's family, it was uniquely personal and tragic. In 2019, Michael Brown Sr. spoke with St. Louis Public Radio reporter Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson about the phone call that changed his life.
My mind went to, I couldn't even tell you, I was somewhere in a dark place. I went straight to a tunnel. You know, I just was like, everything is moving too slow for me. I need to go there. You know, like, it's hard to explain. But just trying to get to where he's at, you know, and it's like people ain't moving fast enough or, you know, like almost in the Matrix.
For more than 4 hours, Michael Brown Jr.'s body lay in the street under the sweltering summer sun. It was a grim scene. Residents of the nearby apartment complex ushered children into rooms facing away from Canfield Drive. A crowd there had swelled. Police were everywhere. Screams and cries permeated the air. By the time Michael Brown Sr. arrived, his son's body was covered with a white sheet, his feet still exposed. Police blocked Brown Sr. from getting closer and refused to answer his questions. But two items strewn nearby spoke to him clearly, a red Cardinals hat and a pair of Nike flip-flops next to Mike's body.
I knew for a fact that was him then. We were being disrespected, couldn't see him. He laid in the street so long, you know, 4.5 hours. It just was ridiculous, you know. And having dogs barking at us. It was ARs pointing in our face. It was just a ridiculous day. It was terrible, you know.
Since then, Michael Brown Sr. and his wife, Cal Brown, have worked to turn their pain into purpose. The couple launched the Michael Brown Sr. Chosen for Change organization to help other families navigate loss and grief. STLPR's Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson recently spoke with the Browns as they mark the 10-year anniversary of their son's killing. Here's Marissa Ann.
10 years ago, your son, Michael Brown Jr., was shot and killed by a Ferguson police officer. Michael, I know the healing journey isn't easy. How are you doing these days?
Well, working through the foundation, giving back, helping families heal best way I can, basically helps me grab onto a little bit of healing myself. So I'm doing pretty good.
How about you, Cal?
I'm blessed by the best, so I won't complain.
I know that's right. So, Cal, I have to ask you about the kids. So much has changed. Y'all now have preteens, teens, adults, and another grandkid on the way. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
How are they doing?
They have grown up so much. Everybody is their own little individual self and seeking their little ways through the world. For the entire family, you know, this season is rough, but with our togetherness and the way that we have raised our children, we're doing pretty good.
Michael, a big part of your life is the Michael Brown Sr. Chosen for Change organization. Mm-hmm. What is its goal and purpose?
Save lives, you know, to help reinvent these families, you know, from the trauma and the pain that they endured through losing their loved one.
Can you talk about what kind of work you're doing through this organization?
So I have a father's group. It's called Chosen Fathers. I have a mother's group. It's called Mothers of an Angel. And both of those entities are around healing and helping these families learn the new them. Sadly, they get put in a place where, you know, they don't even know who they are. So just trying to help them reinvent themselves. You know, I have a program called COPES, Children Overcoming Painful Experiences. That lies around children that suffer the same trauma. Sadly, a lot of us don't pay attention to children, you know, when they lose a loved one or a brother or a mother. And then they wonder why a child spiral out of control when they get a certain age because they didn't receive the help. So we offer those programs for children, you know, that need help, right? We have a cookies and combo that we do each month, and that consists of a space where men, women, and children can come in and get some bonding, some healing, and be around people that feel like them. We have another program called First 48 we're going to be launching soon. You know, there will be responders to reach out to these families when they're going through the same thing that we, our family, has experienced. You know, so, you know, level up for literacy. I go in and play with the children, teach them how to read. You know, we got a lot of stuff. I wear a lot of hats.
A lot of hats indeed. And you mentioned, you know, the idea that you want to give people, especially kids, a space to heal. Was it inspired by your own kids and their experience? Can you talk more about that?
Sadly, when these things had happened to my family, no one asked us actually what did we really need. And at the time, we really didn't know what we needed, you know, until we actually seen other families go through the same thing that we went through. So, you know, we got a better understanding then that, you know, these are programs and these are the things that we have to do to step up to help these families. And in the same time, in the same note, you know, while we're helping them, we're healing too.
And you are also, Cal, an integral part of this organization and making sure that, you know, these mothers, fathers, kids, or guardians, anyone in this kind of familial space has a way to heal and get that comfort. Can you think of a specific person or family that you all have helped, somebody who really stands out to you? And can you tell us about them?
We had a family who we met some years back, and they expressed that they were upset with the activists in the community. And we asked them why, and they said because nobody asked us what we needed. So we asked, well, what is it that you did need? And they said, we needed someone to clean my child's blood out of our family vehicle so that we can get back and forth to work. So that just really showed us that even for ourselves, people galvanize around you and they want to help, but a lot of times they don't know how to help. And while they're giving you money and giving you food and other things that are not tangible, they forget to just ask the question, what do you need? And I don't really think it's purposely done. I just think it's something that's often overlooked because they're so busy giving and they figure they're giving the things, you know, their family needs. But there's little tedious tasks like that. You know, when you think about us, nobody asked us what we needed. They just kept buying hotel rooms. They kept on giving us money and putting us in spaces and feeding us. And nobody realized that we was homeless with seven children. So when people are dealing with families like us, that's the first thing that they have to do. They have to take a moment and stop and say, what is it that you need?
And speaking about that, you've incorporated Grief the Bear as a way for the kids that you work with within your organization to cope. Cal, can you describe what this bear looks like and how it came to be?
So Grief the Bear is a large white, I guess, polar bear, teddy bear. He is lovable and he is huggable. And Grief the Bear can pretty much be anything that you imagine him to be. Grief the Bear came from our daughter, Michael, our youngest daughter. When I went on a cruise in 2020 with my sister, we were on the Carnival ship and they had a Build-A-Bear workshop. And I went in there and we built my daughter this beautiful bear, dressed it beautifully and ballerina clothes and shoes and all matching. And I brought it home and presented it to her because my birthday is January the 7th and her birthday is January the 12th. So I was on a cruise during her birthday. So I wanted to bring her something special. And I gave her this bear and she was so excited about the bear. But she stripped the bear and she compared this bear to giving her the love that she wanted from her brother, and that this bear was helping her cope with her brother's death. So we would often catch her talking to this bear and calling it Mike and hugging it and playing different games and tea parties. And when I looked at her, I was like, wow, that could really be something. You know, that could be a companion for children who are going through grief.
How do the kids you work with react to Grief the Bear?
Oh, they absolutely love Grief the Bear. The school we were at, the leadership school, was one of the first places that we showed Grief the Bear. And when we came in, we first got strange looks because they expect to see me and Mike together. But one particular time, I had to be Grief the Bear. So they looking around like, where Miss Brown at? Is she in that suit? You know, and they just were excited and, you know, had fun and came up and hugged and took pictures. And then I ended up tricking them. My daughter was supposed to be in the suit, but I had to wait a few minutes. And I snuck away and we switched suits. So when I came out, they was like, wasn't you? No, I just got here. So they was like, wow. But even adults gravitate to Grief the Bear. We had Grief the Bear at Give STL Day, you know, earlier this year. And you had 40, 50, 60-year-old people walking up and wanting a hug and wanted to embrace and take a picture. So Grief the Bear is not just for children. It's for anyone.
So Grief the Bear isn't going away anytime soon, I see.
It does not look like it.
And I understand that you also have become Grief the Bear, Michael.
Yeah.
How do you feel about being Grief the Bear from time to time?
Well, the love that Grief the Bear gets, you know, I still embrace it because I'm inside of Grief the Bear. So I get the hug for real. You know, so, yeah, it's a great experience. And I'm glad people are able to enjoy Grief the Bear.
This organization is more than just grief support. You know, we've already talked about it, offering after-school youth programs. Y'all help with their homework, make sure they have food, a safe space where they know they can go to. Why was it important for you to make sure that young people are the focal point of that?
The youth are our future. They're the future leaders, entrepreneurs, and trendsetters of tomorrow. And we have to make sure that we nurture them. That is one of the things that's lacked because of so much going on. People forget the nurturing and the needs of children. And as you can see, we absolutely love children. And children personally bring me joy. I would rather be in a room full of 100 children versus 10 adults. So I just want to make sure that I play my part in these underserved and underprivileged communities where most children either don't have both parents or parents at all. You know, a lot of the children that we serve, dad could be incarcerated, mom could be absent, you know, so we just really wanted to fill in the gap to make sure that we were creating a space that was inclusive for their needs.
So where does this work happen?
We launched last year in the 24-in-1 area, the Normandy area. That is an underserved, underprivileged, you know, area. We do plan to expand, but it's a lot. It's a lot trying to show up an entire school year for children. So we're just being strategic on how we move forward to make sure that we can withhold the capacity.
So let's talk All Roads Lead to Ferguson. Your organization is hosting several events to honor your son's life and the work that's been done to bring awareness and positive change in his absence. What can people expect? Because there is a lot going on.
It is. It is. And originally we started out August 8th through August 11th. But then we were just like, we really wanted to put together as many days as we could to just really reflect, you know, who Mike was.
The That's Cal Brown, Michael Brown Jr.'s stepmother, and Michael Brown Sr. talking with STLPR's Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. Some of the organization's events include the opening today of the art exhibition called As I See You, a screening of the documentary Ferguson Rises tomorrow evening, several panel discussions this week, and a 4.5-mile unity walk on Friday, August 9th. A full list of events, including their times and locations, is on the Michael Brown Sr. Chosen for Change organization's website. That's chosenforchange.org. We'll have more of this conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to STLPR reporter Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson's conversation with Michael Brown Sr. and Cal Brown. This Friday marks the 10-year anniversary of their son, Michael Brown Jr.'s killing by a Ferguson police officer.
Michael, every year you've made your way back to Canfield Drive to build a memorial in his honor. Why is it important for you to continue to do that work?
I continue to do the work because I don't want the people to forget. Sadly, when tragedy happens, a lot of people go on with their life. And the reality of this family and the reality of the community, what had happened that had affected this community, I feel like I have to put this on and have this going on to give back, to recognize what happened and then the public know that I will never forget this. And I will never forget them for standing up for my son. So it's just not me commemorating him. It's me giving back and getting back into the community and showing love to the, you know, for the unity that was made, and to try to bring that back, because after that day or that weekend, it kind of separates again. So we're trying to keep unity together.
So y'all called him Mike. Mm-hmm. What do you think he would make of all the work you all put in to honor him?
I think he'd be happy. I think that personally, a lot of this work is basically off of his thoughts before he passed away. You know, so we just continuing the mission. You know, I don't know in the magnitude of this work that he'll be doing, but I know it will be something. You know, we definitely paid attention when the case with Trayvon Martin had happened. He was very pissed. He went out, he protested, and he had wore his hoodie. There's a couple of pictures floating around. He got his hoodie on. So that there, I recognize, you know, that he was clear of this unjust system, you know, things that can happen, you know. And sadly, he passed away or got murdered. Somewhere similar, but not in the same way. But yeah, I think that, to answer your question, I think that he will be, he probably will be the movement. Who knows?
I'm curious, what has been lost in your son's story and stories like your son as time goes by?
That he was loved, that he was a human, he was dehumanized. Just a big brother, a cousin, you know, just this humane part, you know.
So that brings me to this, because you've talked about his humanity. There is this idea out there that your son had to be this perfect victim in order to extend empathy. What are your thoughts on that belief system?
Well, over the years, we looked into a few things, and it's crazy that we read up on that. A lot of people that's in the public feel that police officers are always right. So whatever choice that they make, they had to make it, you know. And it bothers me because it lets me know that, you know, that some people now are not considerate of situations or want to dig into situations to see what had happened. You know, we all are human, we all make mistakes, you know, and me personally, I know, and we all know that police officers wake up with a bad day too. They have headaches, they have back aches like we do, they feet hurt, they cry, You know, they get angry. So when people say these things like police officers are robots and they don't have no feelings, and if they make a certain move, it's justified, it bothers me.
Do you believe that anything has gotten better in the last 10 years?
Well, the faces of power have changed. They feel if they put black people here, black people there, that it changes the narrative of things. But it has not. Somebody asked us about the statistics of crime rate, the crime rate the other day, that is supposed to be the lowest in 90 years. I beg to differ. Because every day I'm getting phone calls about parents losing their children. So, yeah, for me, not a lot has changed. People are doing a lot of things, but because of the lack of unity, the lack of collaboration, it seems to me we're a little bit worse off than we began in 2014.
What about you, Mike? Do you think that things have gotten better or are they a little bit the same?
I'll just say we got a lot of work to do. We all are clear. Things don't change overnight, especially if it's enrooted and embedded, you know, and it's ill, right? And you know when things are sick, you know, you got to doctor it back up to heal it, right? So we got a long way to go. But we do have a I'm glad to see that we have a start.
You and your family have been calling for accountability and justice for years now. Are you still hopeful that that will happen in any meaningful capacity?
Of course. I will never stop fighting and wanting justice for Mike Brown Jr. You know, whatever I have to do, you know, to bring his case back up or try to get his case back reopened, you know, and make that a priority, I will, you know. There's no statute on murder, so, you know, it depends on, you know, whoever's next to that wants to investigate. Hopefully they'll do a thorough investigation and not go over old records.
What would that look like to you? What would justice look like for you now?
I can't say, you know. Justice, just period, justice would be that my son would be right here with me, you know, so, yeah.
What would justice look like for you, Cal?
Well, I guess according to what they would give us would be Darren Wilson having his day in court and being held accountable for what he did. But, you know, what does justice really look like when you lose your child? That's really hard to paint, you know, that type of picture. There are many families that we know that so-called got justice, and it was in a monetary form, and then they're asked to be quiet and not talk about it anymore. So, like, is that really justice? You know, it's just really hard to paint what the true picture of justice would look like, because we'll never get Mike back. I just pray, I hope and I pray that his parents are still alive when justice is served.
Your son's death has sparked global movements. When people speak your son's name, how do you hope they will remember his legacy?
That he was chosen for change, that his death literally changed the trajectory of the world. There's nowhere in the world that you can go and you do not hear his name or see his face on a mural on a wall or being mentioned.
Michael, when you took me to your son's gravesite 5 years ago, you spoke to him and you said, quote, "You know your old dude still loves you, man. He ain't going nowhere. People forget. I don't forget. You're still here with me." How do you remember your son?
I remember my son smiling, you know, being silly, you know, definitely was the people's choice, right? Before the hashtag, right? So, just a fun guy, you know, loved his grandparents, you know, treated them like they was his girlfriends. Like, he just loved different, you know. But yeah, his character was just amazing.
Do you still see him and visit him often now?
Crazy thing, I seen them. Well, I went last night.
Do you still find that time together healing for you?
Of course. The cemetery, I get more of a chance to breathe, right? Ground zero, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. The air is thick. Even if I want to go out there, no disrespect to the public or anything, but I got blows. I get blows and waves, and I can't just focus. But that's not the place I want to be able to focus at anyway, you know, because I made up my mind the cemetery is best for me to have my moment, you know.
Well, thank you so much, Michael and Cal, for joining me today and having this conversation. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Michael Brown Sr. and Cal Brown talking with STLPR reporter Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson about their son, Michael Brown Jr. The couple turned their pain into purpose by launching the Michael Brown Sr. Chosen for Change organization to help other families navigate loss and grief. This Friday marks the 10-year anniversary of Michael Brown Jr.'s killing by a Ferguson police officer. His death sparked a global movement calling for police accountability and an end to racial injustice.
This episode was produced, recorded, and edited by our executive producer, Alex Hoyer. Podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.